Welcome to the Twid Show. I am Chris Wink, your host and CEO of Technically, a new site about local economies and change. Each week, the Twid Show dives into conversations about building better companies with leaders who are doing just that. We are an extension of Technically's This Week in Jobs newsletter, which you can join at technically.com/subscribe. Here's a topic, the office. A centuries-old concept that was already under strain by remote-first web companies, challenged even more by a pandemic and the social distancing it requires. Today, we talk about how and why you might dare to bring back your company to a physical location. Today, to do that, I'm joined by two experts. First, I have Jonathan Wasserstrom. He's a commercial real estate veteran who is the CEO and founder of Squarefoot, a commercial real estate platform startup that announced its $16 million Series B financing round last year. They have roughly 75 employees, most of whom would normally be split between Manhattan and Belfast offices. I also have Maeva Donnan. She's a principal at KSS Architects. She's a range of specialties with a focus in office design, and her firm has been intensely involved in how offices are changing, especially in respect to the COVID-19 pandemic. Jonathan, Maeva, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So can we start off like, we're in the height of offices are done. We're all remote. Sell it. Commercial real estate is collapsing around us. Give me the case. You guys still like offices. Why?
I'll jump in there. Well, I don't think offices are dead. I think similar to what has happened in the retail sector, you know, where they had to go through their own evolution in response to e-commerce, I think you're going to see the same thing happening with offices. And I'm not just saying that because I have a, you know, financial stake in it, because you know, I might be out of a little bit more work if there are no more offices. But I think offices drive collaboration, and that's what drives innovation.
Jonathan, offices, they're dead. They're never coming back. True?
No, I don't think anything could be further from the case, actually. Offices didn't just exist because the internet didn't. The offices brought a lot of value, period. That doesn't mean that work from home doesn't work. Like, my work from home life has been great, aside from that I live with my in-laws, which has been fine. But it's not like how I plan on living the rest of my
life.
You're
a better man than me.
knock on wood, it's worked out great, but there's clearly, look, I think the thing that doesn't get talked about because it doesn't make for a good headline is there's benefits and costs with both work from home and benefits and costs with being in the office. And I think it's really kind of tone deaf of everybody to say one is the absolute only way to work or the other is the absolute only way to work. What I do think will happen over time is there will be a blending of the two, right? Recognizing that they each have their pluses and minuses. People, depending on where they are in their life cycle, where they are in a specific role of the company, will spend most of their time in the office, but also some of their time working from home, right? So, you know, commute suck, period. Not everybody has a commute. So if you don't have a commute and there are clearly benefits to being in the office, you'll be in the office. If you have a long commute, recognizing there's still benefits to being in the office, you won't go into the office 5 days a week. You'll go in 3 days a week. And the office of the future, which starts as soon as it's really safe to go back, which we're starting to get to, will start taking the kind of new way of working into consideration.
It's interesting that you tied it to commuting. I don't know if you know this, but I, little factoid, the first time that the concept of telecommuting emerged as a concept was in 1973, and it was by an author. He was writing that offices were more about a communication issue than they were a work issue. And so if you could stop people, so congestion was a communication problem. So if you could stop people from driving to the office, you would not need as much oil, you'd save the environment. And this was, you know, in 1973, which was a little bit before I was born, but maybe some of your listeners may remember lines at the gas pump. It was a huge issue. So there's been kind of a pendulum swing over the years, for sure.
I want to linger on that for a sec, because, man, I feel like every societal moment we have, we tend to like arbitrarily pit these two sides against each other. In this case, as you're saying, Jonathan, it is everyone will be remote all the time, or no one will ever be remote ever. And that seems illogical, because like probably the way society always moves, there is, as you're alluding to, a blending that we're trying to move toward more choice, not swinging from one extreme to another. Is that something you guys are already experiencing? I mean, frankly, I have to say, isn't that something probably you guys already experienced as professionals before like the pandemic, right? I have to feel like that was somewhat part of your lifestyles. Yes?
Somewhat for some people, but the question, like I told you, I'm living my father-in-law, right? So he works at a law firm. And before this, there was never a thought that people would work remotely. And they just signed like a big, nice new office space and a nice new building downtown. Now there's talk, not that they're not going to go back, but that when they do go back, not everybody's going to have to go back every day of the week. Right. Because until whatever, March 10th or March 15th, they had never had to think about, can you even try and think about working remotely, right? So yes, there's a bunch of companies that have been built from the ground up remotely. I think that still is in the minority. It clearly is in the minority historically. I believe it will also be in the minority going forward because of the things already discussed, which is it's suboptimal. That doesn't mean that you can't build a company remotely. And there are clearly some benefits of being partially remote, right? Like I said, we have a satellite office in Belfast, right? We can now attract talent in two markets. That's clearly better than attracting talent in only one market. We also have a designer who we love who's been with us for a few years. And when she wanted to move to Seattle, we didn't say, hey, you're no longer working at Square Foot. We said, great, you're going to go live in Seattle. So I think the name of the day should have been already, but will clearly come to the forefront going forward is flexibility around all of that. Mm-hmm. But there's not to your point, like the word illogical, I would use something a lot ruder than that. It's stupid to say that it's one or the other. And companies of the future will embrace both.
Yeah, I think for where I stand, you know, work from home has always been a perk. And I think that's been true of a lot of companies that we've worked with. We actually just did, right before the pandemic, did a big redesign for a company in Philly, and they fit out a whole bunch of space. And there were, you know, some fear of, you know, what are we going to do? Did we make kind of the right decision? And I think they kind of came back to that. Their core value is collaboration, and working from home has always been, you know, was always a perk. It was always there. For my industry, you know, work from home was a perk, but there was definitely like a big emphasis on FaceTime. And so one of the things I am really encouraged by this, you know, the pendulum swings from side to side, but it also sort of makes a circle. You know, I think that you sort of see the trends coming and going, that I think it's actually really much more inclusive for a lot of folks, particularly folks who have families. If we can ever get schools open again, that is, that it makes it a little bit easier for a lot of folks. You know, they can do a blended work style, and I think that's very possible.
I want to spend the last 10 minutes we have on the how, and I want to talk to you in a moment, Jonathan, but just one last point on the why. I feel like there's a question of equity that is being lost in particularly like web focused companies talking, we're going all remote only. And there's this assumption that we all must have fabulous work, you know, home offices. And so we all can just stay. And I've been confronted in our own organization, in some of our reporting, that probably should remember that people have different home lives, and sometimes an office is safer. It may just be more flexible. It may genuinely offer some amenities. There is a degree of the office as integrative factor. The office is socioeconomic opportunity. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of power that can take place in the office. So I want to just pause. Is that something that's come up for you guys, this idea that there's an opportunity for social mobility, economic mobility that can take place in the office when we're not just making the most privileged folks who can have a fantastic home office, you know, have a great experience? Is that part of it for you guys, or have you, you know, confronted that or talked about that at all?
Yeah, I think separate from the mobility that happens once you're in the office, because there will be some people who say rightly that like, if you have to be near the CEO for mobility purposes, then that's a bad CEO and not the company I work at. Fine, I won't, kind of outside the scope of this. Right. But I'll tell you, so I live with my in-laws, and it's like a suburb just out of the city. And I went for a walk on over the weekend, and I ran into a guy who kind of a friend of my in-laws. And he's a senior executive at a big company. And he was talking about how great work from home is. And he's like, I could do this forever. And I said, okay, that's good. What about the rest of the company? He's like, no, it sucks for them.
Like we have, everybody but me.
We have people who, like, live in a studio with their partner in the middle of Hell's Kitchen around the corner from a hospital. That's not, and he's like self-aware enough to know that he's a different life stage than that 25-year-old, but also that 25-year-old might not like his work from home environment, and that just because he has it good doesn't mean that everybody else does, and then that shouldn't dictate just what he wants or what's best for him is not clearly what's best for the company. Because by the way, like a CEO, right, my number one job or number two job is to get the right people on the team, right? So that's recruiting, and that's making the environment, the company, the culture, one that is able to attract the best and the brightest. And if the best and the brightest still want to work from the office, and I believe that especially in urban markets, that's going to be the case, then you need to have an office for them that's welcoming and is not a stigma to go to the office. I mean, think about how stupid it's going to be. It's a stigma to say, okay, I want to go work from the office.
Yeah, it's quite a flip. Maybe in your practice, is that coming across as all that office as just, leveling effect?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that there, I think what one of the things that, Jonathan started to touch on, that maybe a bigger issue than to think about is kind of the economic inequalities that, that are being exposed right now, because, a lot of the folks who are able to see, to work remotely right now, right, is a very particular type of worker. It's a knowledge worker. And so, I think inherently, I think we're probably all, particularly in light of some of the stuff that's been layered in lately, we're all kind of grappling with that. But yeah, I mean, I think, fundamentally what it comes down to, as I look at it, is that, offices, there was already a trend. There was a trend towards densification within offices of bringing people tighter and tighter together. So I don't think I think that's going to maybe ease up. And that's probably a good thing, because, if you ever worked in one of those open offices where you were right up next to other people, you really wanted to be in that phone booth room or the huddle room, for a lot of your day to be able to escape from that. But I think, the biggest thing that it did, being in the office, is that opportunity to connect with the colleagues that you might not be working with on an everyday basis. And I think that there's a lot of research from a lot of different fields that you can look at that, working with people who are maybe not your best friends, the first person that you immediately connected with, being able to work with people who are different than you, who you may not have kind of immediate common ground with, is what really leads you to sort of new discoveries and innovation. And, you're only going to find that if you're able to, be physically present in an environment where you're, literally bumping into people. So, I think there's a lot to be gained.
So we've set the table on some of the why. Let's spend some time on the how. Jonathan, one reason that you're here is because you're taking a particularly data-rich approach, I understand, in how you're assessing your own return to the office. Can you talk a little bit about your approach and maybe what that might mean for other companies as they think about, when am I doing this? How am I doing it? Who am I doing it with? Can you walk us through some of how you're approaching this own process?
Yeah. So, first and foremost, we are doing this ourselves look, we're a broker at the end of the day, so we have hundreds of clients who we've spoken to the last couple of months who look to us for advice on all of this. So we spent probably definitely a lot more time than the average company thinking about this. So, we call it a hackathon, because that's a cool thing to do in tech, where we essentially split the team up into a few different areas about the return to work setup. So that's both the in-office environment, the billing environment, the commute environment, and a couple other things. And, we started with that. And then for us in particular, we did a survey of who in the office wants to come back when, right? Kind of putting safety aside, because safety is this exogenous variable that we don't know, is there a vaccine that comes out tomorrow, in which case none of this matters, or are we gonna be in this for longer than that? So we start with who wants to come back when and how often, and then use the constraints of the office that we already have to try and figure out how do we open up the office to be able to enable the highest number of people that want to come back as quickly as possible, while still taking all the proper social distancing protocols, both in the office and around the office, right? So getting to and from the office, getting, once you hit the office building, we don't have any control over the lobby, but once you're upstairs, our own space, and then kind of the shared facilities on the floor, we have bathroom and hallways.
And you mentioned a few factors, and we probably could spend time on them all, but to linger on one of the challenges we're all confronting is medical research is rapidly still learning about how the heck we handle this thing. One of the early understandings is inside, like, right? One of the big ideas here is that this might really be transferred
indoor air quality.
Right. And so, yeah. How does that come up?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's the stickiest issue to deal with, you know, and I'm sure, you know, like Jonathan, you know, a lot of the clients that we're working with, they're doing the maps of how do I repurpose all of the spaces, come up with the policies for how to use the shared spaces or the protocols for how you come, you go, and stay far apart, you know, but one of the biggest challenges is, I think, indoor air quality. And so some folks are starting to look at some of the upgrades to mechanical systems, like increasing the amount of fresh air that comes in through those systems or introducing UV light in the ductwork, which are expensive upgrades. But, you know, the one thing that I think is a really positive coming out of that is that it's actually better for you anyway to have more fresh air. So if this triggers a change for office building owners to up the amount of fresh air in their buildings, it's a net positive for everybody for a very long time. There's a lot of really great research about how it ups your productivity, your alertness, probably gives you thicker, fuller hair. You know, there's a lot of inherent benefits. So I find that emphasis on wellness to be a really positive kind of outcome of those conversations.
John, I want to ask you more on your process, but actually to stay here for a second, would the advice be for companies companies represented listening here with who are perhaps often tenants not owning their own facility, should they be pushing on their landlord on the air quality thing? Is that something that's come up for you, Jonathan or Maeva? Are you recommending clients, should we be pushing on the owner of the company on air quality? That seems beyond the tenant.
Sorry, on the owner of the building?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can try, and depending on the building, they'll either listen or they won't. Yeah. And I think a lot of that will depend on the kind of quality of the building, and also, without getting too in the weeds, like if they're trying to lease a bunch of new space, they need to get the building ready to go for that. If it's fully let with long-term leases, maybe they care less. They'll say, great, you don't want to be here. You should have thought about that before you signed a long-term lease earlier this year.
Right. Fair.
It'll run the gamut.
I think it may emerge as a differentiator, but it's, you know, and certainly folks can ask for it. It's expensive. And a lot of the construction delays that we've seen are supply chain related. So that really impacts mechanical equipment too. So it's not an easy, fast fix to make. But that's really, you know, indoor air quality is kind of, you know, yeah, it's what we're learning. You know, it's about how your breath goes across a space. And there are some folks who have done some really interesting studies of computational fluid dynamics to show you, you know, how the breath moves around and everything. It's a tough problem to solve.
Maeva, we have a few minutes. So I want to turn to you each for like maybe one last question. I know, Maeva, you alluded to you and your firm are having a series of conversations, of webinars on just this topic. So maybe plug one that's upcoming. But while you do that, sure. Also add, like, I got to feel like this is the theme of our last 20 minutes of conversation has been the acceleration of existing trends, not the creation of them. Mm-hmm. Is that right. Something that resonates with you in your own practice, and you know, where can folks learn more about what you're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been talking about this across a range of different markets, from K-12, industrial, which everyone knows is hot with Amazon doing such great business right now, as well as, you know, higher ed. So we've been thinking a lot about, you know, how does the current pandemic accelerate or validate trends? We spoke a little bit about that, about the densification that was happening in workplace. There was already a trend towards having more flexible workplace, but I think workplace leasing terms that I think is going to continue to accelerate. Work from home is going to continue to be, you know, a perk that we'll see more of. activity-based work environments. If offices shift to being more about collaboration, I think we'll continue to also accelerate in the workplace world. So yeah, we've been talking about this a lot, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to plug some of what we've been doing. We've been curating some roundtable discussions. We had a really great one back in July, and we're going to do another one next Thursday. Would love to have you, Christopher or Jonathan, join. We're really looking to hear, you know, what folks think, because there's a lot to talk about. So we're talking about all about the why of coming back. So
Jonathan, maybe using your own experience here, any tactics you'd want to advise others to take into following this process, or anything you're learning from you know, yourself being a broker at its core? What do you want to arm people with on the way out?
Yeah, and I'll also advocate something that we're starting to provide to our clients too, which we're going to talk about to non-clients. So as I mentioned, we spent a ton of time figuring out the best way to do this. And what we started hearing, we prepared a return to work guide for our clients. And one of the things that we keep hearing is, great, all this stuff sounds good, but how do we do it? And the feedback there, quite pragmatically, and unfortunately, one of the first people to be let go in all this was generally the office manager back in April. So now you have a bunch of decision makers, C-level people who know they need to do this, also don't have anybody they can give this to. And there's the broader this, which is getting past the why, which I think everybody, well, either you agree with it or you don't. If you don't, then you should get rid of your office. If you do, then you need to figure out how to get back in the office. But how do we do that practically, right? So we have this guide, and we're starting to provide advisory services around that guide to get people back to the office, right? So we can be kind of your outsourced office manager, facilities manager, because the average company doesn't have that right now. And practically, we can take people through the same steps that we did ourselves, which is, how do you think about density? How do you think about getting people into the office, right? Whether that's do you make them sign a waiver, not from a liability perspective, but just to make sure they understand, do you have any symptoms? Yes, no. Do you do temperature checks? There's at least 10 different questions that every company's going to want to answer, and they won't all answer it the same. And again, we have this service now that we're rolling out that we'd be happy to help anybody with as well.
That's great. We'll make sure to put that in the links. All right, we're at time. So summon the energy to give a broad brush prognostication all in the span of 8 seconds or something like it. What is your final takeaway on what this office looks like in the 3 to 5 years from now when we look back with honeyed eyes at the summer of 2020 and the destruction that the pandemic wrought? Maeva, what the heck is the future of the office with the...
Yeah, I think the office, will continue to be the driver will be, it's the place that brings people together, that drives collaboration, that drives company culture. And it will have, we still very much, as we get more digital, we very much crave in-person real life experiences, and there's no substitute for that.
Jonathan.
Yeah, I think the only thing more dystopian than going to the office every day is not going to the office every day. And I think the office of the future is going to look materially like the office of the past did. Like, everybody's now taking a step back and saying, what should the office look like? Do we need the office? I think the answer a few months from now, from a productivity perspective, will be absolutely wanted and needed. And then the question is, what does it look like, right? And what percentage of the workforce is going in 5 days a week versus 3 days a week versus rarely? And then that will dictate how you actually set up your office. But the notion of not having an office is not something that I would be very bullish on.
That's a great way to go out. Maeva, Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. This has been The Twig Show, talking about the how and why of returning back to the office. As always, you can like and subscribe, and we have some past episodes that you can click through. We'll see you next week talking about building better companies, and we'll drop in the links and on the Technically article some of the work that Maeva and Jonathan are doing on this subject. Thank you, guys, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you.